Hello there, Ed here, and just a quick message before we start today's podcast. Whether you're starting out, settling in, or scaling your freelance business, navigating the ever-changing freelance marketplace can be challenging. That's why, on top of the essential practical support, the Freelance Heroes community gives you the moral support to help you go it alone without feeling alone. So join one of our UK freelance membership plans today to start accessing support and grow your presence. Visit freelance-heroes.com and embrace the ace of freelancing with Freelance Heroes, because no freelancer is an island. Right, on with today's episode. Hello there and welcome to the Freelance Heroes podcast. Now, as you know, community is at the heartbeat of everything that we do. Providing a place where freelancers can come together to share experience and knowledge. And some people are more active than others in communities, and that's okay, that's to be expected. Many freelancers read information in communities and soak up all the stories that are being shared, and others are more active. Today, we meet Dawn Baird, who is one of those more active members. But by active, I don't recall the last time she shared something that was self-promotional. Actually, for her, it's been about helping answer other people's questions, and she's one of the most active members of the community by answering other people's questions, as well as asking questions for help from others too. But why? If there's no self-promotional element in there, what's the point? What's the benefit? How much time does she spend sharing all this stuff, and what benefit does it have to freelance, to help her freelance business? Why is the community so important to Dawn? Well, that's what this episode is all about. So let's head to Northern Ireland and meet Dawn Baird. Enjoy. You are one of life's people who we've spoken probably on the phone maybe twice. We've been involved in a Zoom chat, including this one, maybe two or three times. And that's it. And yet, I feel like I know you, but that's because you've been a part of Freelance Heroes now for, well, 4 years. I feel like we go back way back, actually, Dawn. But yeah, we've spoken so rarely, so it's nice to have this opportunity to get to know you a bit better now.
Well, thank you very much, and thank you for having me on the podcast. I appreciate it.
And of course, no matter how many episodes we have, you will be the first Northern Ireland representative of the Freelance Heroes podcast. I don't doubt that's, you know, will be a trophy that sits with you well. So to give, and we have, listeners from all over the world, when they look at a map of Northern Ireland, give us an idea of where they might find where you're based.
Well, where I'm based actually is at home, so I don't have an official office space, and I am smack bang in the middle of the country, so I can see sheep and cows outside any window of my house. I can see rolling fields, and even I have my own private little hill, which means we get all the weather. If there's any weather, we get it first. So yeah, we're out in the middle of the country. It's very relaxing, very de-stressing, so I love it. We're about approximately an hour away from Belfast.
I live in East England. As soon as you said the word hills, I had envy, because I don't know where our nearest hill is even. But there you go. Well, it's lovely to for you to join us. And I wanted to talk to you because you have been a part of the Freelance Heroes community for so long, but an incredibly active part of the community throughout. And I want to talk to you about why that's important to you and why you're so active within the community. And I don't mean that. I don't recall the last time I saw you post anything that was actually self-promotional, but we'll get on to that. I guess where I want to start is to find out a bit more about you. So tell us, what is you do and how did your freelancing journey start?
Well, both my husband and I are in the business together. Our business is called Sensei, and we initially started probably about a year in advance of when we planned to do it. Al and I got married, we were married about a year. And prior just to that, I had been freelancing a little bit sort of on and off in between jobs, delivering IT training for companies around Belfast. And with no planning, with no, I'm not even sure I was registered on any register as a business owner, with absolutely zero planning, had to figure out tax later. So I'd done that for a little bit. But what we do now, after sort of setting up about 15 years ago, is we're content developers. So what that means is we do an awful lot of business writing and business content development. It could be for a training purpose. It could be to explain someone's product, write their website content. And that's essentially what we do now. But the starting off point was probably we were pushed into it a little bit sooner because one of us was ill. Took a little bit of time off work. And then we kind of thought, you know, this is a good opportunity. Instead of starting straight back into employment, we'll just do this now. And so we're pushed into it a wee bit sooner than planned, really.
And so I put myself on mute then because I realised that in the room next door is my, in true freelance style, like you, based from home, my son is, I think it's one of the Power Rangers that he's listened to, not sure which one. If I find out, I'll put it in the show notes. So your freelancing journey was, I mean, it's ironic really that you put so much planning, but then was kind of forced upon you at the same time. So given the level of planning you put into that, how did that change of environment that kind of brought the process forward, how did that affect the start of your journey?
It was probably a couple of things. Honestly, I don't really get stressed about work. You know, certainly the style of work that I do now, which is working for myself, I don't really get stressed. Back then, it was about 15 years ago, I certainly got stressed with working with other people and with working for an employer, because I always had this idea in my head that I could do things better, so as a lot of small business owners do. So that's not an unusual feeling, I suppose. But I guess it did two things. It was a little bit stressful. But more than that, it was really liberating, because just around that time, you know, illness was a bit of an issue. That was resolved. We moved on. But it felt very liberating, to be honest, to be able to have that freedom, and a little bit scary at the same time.
Freedom of what, though? Was it the freedom to direct where you were going? Was it the freedom of how and where you worked? What was the freedom that you so specifically felt liberated by?
I think working from home as opposed to doing the commute is a big plus for both of us, really. So that enabled us to have an extra couple of hours in our day. You know, we didn't at that time live too far from Belfast and from where most of our customers were, so it wasn't a big commute, maybe 40 minutes, but it meant that we had that extra time. It also meant that we could choose our own clients, or, you know, so the myth goes, that took a few years to achieve that stage where we could choose our own clients. So that came down the line maybe 3 or 4 years later. But also just to do the kind of work that you want to do. Initially, we started off doing mostly training, design and delivery. And so our business is called Sensei Learning and Performance. That's the official name. But that has changed over the years into, instead of just designing learning content, designing other kinds of content for business. So I think it was just the freedom to do the kind of work we wanted, to do it in the way that we wanted, which was working from home. That was a big, big draw for me especially. And then eventually to work with the kind of clients that you prefer to work with.
It all sounds... you know, that I'm glad it's worked out for you, and especially when you add into the mix the illness troubles as well, which I'm sure were a great worry, but glad that you came through those. So what, when you look back on your freelancing journey, what have been the points that you look at or you think of first when you're trying to find a moment that makes you smile?
I think sometimes it's client, you know, individual clients and really nice people that we've worked with. Those have been high points, and maybe at the time we didn't see them. We just thought, oh, this is another client, this is another piece of business, this is great, you know, tick the box. But that client has turned out to be maybe someone who's become a friend, certainly someone who's advised us a little bit in business as well, and has given us great feedback. Sometimes feedback we didn't want to hear at the time, but has helped us develop and grow. And for me, those are the high points, when you manage to secure a customer That looks just like a regular run-of-the-mill customer. You're maybe not expecting anything special from the relationship, but during that process, you gain a new friend or a new set of colleagues, really. And then when you move on from that, it's actually really difficult to leave those clients. It's almost like you've been in a sort of an employed kind of setting. You've gained a whole bunch of people who really support what you do, love what you do. There's a good relationship. For us, those are the high points. Takes a little time to develop that kind of relationship, but those are the high points for us. And I suppose as well, sort of smaller issues like maybe raising your prices and realizing that after all, no one's going to, you know, shout about that too much. There's always a customer for the price point that you go for. And those have been high points as well. Just realizing that you can change your business, that you can switch around and maybe do something else and then be successful at it.
There's a moment in that I want to pick up, which is around the raising of the prices, because it's a question that frequently comes up within Freelance Heroes, and there's a lot of nerves around that, as there may have been when you did it yourself. I mean, you certainly alluded to it then. So what can you, as much as you can, tell us the situation around it, why you put your prices up? That may be obvious, but how did it feel doing that? What were your worries? And then a bit more about the reaction you had from your clients, if you wouldn't mind.
Yeah, I suppose the first time we put our prices up, to be perfectly honest, this is not very professional. This is not very planned. It was a head stagger moment, as I would say. We purely just thought, hold on a second. Other people are charging X, we are not, for exactly the same service in the same environment, same kind of clients. We've done a research on that. and we thought, why are we not doing this? Why have we not raised our prices? Why are we working so hard for less money whenever the going rate even, you know, we haven't even reached that. And it was purely our own fault. I absolutely blame no one else for this. So I simply decided one day we were raising our prices for one of our key services. And I did. And the next person who lifted the phone to ring us or email us to ask, do you do X? And we had a conversation. I simply quoted the price at them and they didn't bat an eyelid. So that was how we raised our prices. As I said, not terribly organized or professional. After that, you know, we started to look more closely at all of our services. And there are maybe only three or four key ones, development content in different areas and sometimes training delivery and delivery online. So we started to look at the going rate, both here in Northern Ireland and also in America and, you know, other places where we have clients. And so we price accordingly. And sometimes we even find that we're the most expensive quote that a company gets in. But the feedback that we've had on that is, I'll give you an example of one recently where I spoke to a chemical manufacturer here in Northern Ireland. They wanted someone to describe their chemical compositions. I'm not a chemist myself, but it was basically a definitions job. And they get lots and lots of quotes. We were the most expensive by a factor of 5 in one case. But he said, we come back to you because you asked us lots of questions. You asked what our key marketing messages were. You asked us about our clients. You asked tons of questions we'd never even thought of. And so I justify the raise in prices and the fact that we're probably on the more expensive end for some people because we ask those questions, we dig down deep into a company as far as possible or an organization, get what it is they're about, and then we're able to write for them on their behalf for their website or marketing content, whatever it is. So I think you do need to be brave in raising your prices. You need to be certain that you've done your research. Don't do it the way I did at the start. Absolutely not. And then just be confident whenever you're quoting. I think it is a very common, you know, question.
Did it change your mindset? I mean, because it's obviously something, the pricing was something you were very conscious of leading up to that moment. Did you then find that based on the fact that, you know, you were getting feedback initially that didn't bat an eyelid over the pricing, subsequently that actually it wasn't pricing that stood you apart from others anyway. So did it change your mindset, or is it something you're still conscious of when you're talking to clients now?
Yeah, I suppose that experience of raising the price and then, you know, maybe a couple of weeks later got the next call. We don't have a huge number of clients in the year that are necessary to keep us going. So it was a couple of weeks later. I suppose we didn't really think about it at the time. I thought, why not just quote the price and see what happens? And it definitely changed my mindset because it made me realize that I was standing in my own way. And I think that's something that you need to be aware of, especially at the other end of the process, even when you're getting paid or not on time. That's another issue that comes up in the Freelance Heroes group, very closely related.
Way too often.
It changes your whole attitude, and you think, maybe I'm the problem here. And if your price is your only differentiator, then you're going to be competing with market sellers who are maybe selling, five letters for a pound. And that is not the way to go if you want to run a professional business. You can't, just be in a race to the bottom. And that's, unfortunately, if you're going to quote cheap prices all the time, that's exactly what happens.
Wise words. I might use that as the sound bit that I use to talk about this podcast, because you're absolutely right. And thank you for your experience of sharing that too. So when you did go freelance, let's go back to the start of that journey. What was the feeling of those close to you, family and friends? And also, what was the support like in amongst the business community around you as well?
Yeah, great question. I've actually written a blog post on this because I think it's so funny. Among family and friends,
I'll put that in the show notes as well, so that people can go straight to it.
I suppose it's just funny the reaction we had among family. I would say about half were enthusiastic and, oh, what's that about? What's starting business mean? They weren't used to the idea, I suppose, but were very enthusiastic for us and very excited. The other half of the family probably were a little bit nervous. And just didn't really understand why we would want to leave, full-time jobs and do this. Among friends, some friends said, oh, you're incredibly brave, and made us wonder, have we made a really silly decision here? But in terms of support, sort of professional support from the business community, which is really the support that matters when it comes right down to, when you're sitting in front of your laptop on a Monday morning and wondering what on earth to do, in this new job that you set yourself, we have great support here in Northern Ireland. Alan and I both work in the tech community quite a bit among our customers. So there's a great tech community here as well. And there are tons of business start programs to help you get started off. so we find that super helpful. And we had one particular mentor called Ian Kerr, who was based in a Mollusk Enterprise Centre here, just about maybe 45 minutes away from the house. And he was instrumental in drumming into us the absolute basics that you need to know what you're selling, who you're selling it for, and for how much. He emphasised cash flow. He emphasised getting your invoices out on time and chasing them. All the absolute basics, no rocket science. But those lessons have stayed with us, no matter how many other programs we've attended and courses we've attended ourselves in order to learn. Those very, very basic lessons have stayed with us, for such a long time.
I love the fact that you say it's not rocket science, but at the same time, if you didn't have Ian tell you those messages, at what point would you have learnt them yourself? How far down that freelancing journey would you have gone before you realised it was an integral part of freelancing? So simple as it is, it is a message that obviously needs to be spread. When did you start freelancing?
It was probably around 15 years ago. It took us a little bit while to get started. So we had Queen's University was our first customer. My husband did a little bit of freelancing for them, and that probably morphed into about a year later whenever we started properly, both of us started. So yeah, 15 years.
So you don't, for anyone who's unfamiliar with the geography of Northern Ireland, it's not the most populated part of the UK, let alone the world. So, and of course, you started a freelance business in pre-social media days. So when you were going through, obviously you had Ian, which is phenomenal that you had that mentor support. But where else did you go to? Where could you turn to for challenges that you were facing that you didn't know the answers to?
I think that was definitely a problem. And there was a gap. There certainly was a gap. As you say, social media wasn't around. And we started going initially to networking meetings. And that was quite the experience. And you know, my husband and I still laugh about it today.
I wish anyone, if this was on YouTube, I think the image of your facial expression after you mentioned the word networking events would stand out, because it's not one that reflects on them glowingly, clearly.
Well, yes, I'm probably rolling my eyes all the way out the door and down the corridor. The thing is that, you know, the Pinstripe Brigade had arrived at these networking meetings. They were invariably ridiculous times to have 7, 8 o'clock in the morning when no sane person should be thinking of getting up. And, you know, I have to say they were generally male as well. Absolutely nothing wrong with that. But, you know, the mummies dropping off kids at school weren't there because it was a ridiculous time. And, you know, there just wasn't any kind of sense of community at all at those meetings. What they were for is, you know, for everyone to throw their business cards around. And, you know, we did exactly the same thing. We spent hundreds of pounds getting really lovely business cards designed, flyers and so on. And I think, you know, what was there for us was that style of networking meeting. It was very intimidating. I had people asking me, was I the secretary? Because I was so young looking at that time. And I just, you know, we just didn't have enough confidence to approach that room of what felt like salespeople, really more senior people, people who seemed to be more experienced than us. And we kind of just followed suit. We threw out the business cards as well. So it was a very intimidating start to networking. So it took a while. It took years to find out that actually here in Northern Ireland, there were tons of little smaller networking meetings. They weren't called networking. They were called usually after the name of something that they did. So it could have been BizCamp or BarCamp or something like that. So they were much smaller. And they were focused in on tech, or they were focused in on sales or marketing or some particular topic, sometimes even on networking itself. And those were the communities that we ended up joining. Small, local, usually even based in a town. And those were sort of more friendly and full of people that didn't wear pinstripe suits at all.
So, because it's an interesting, because I understand when you're talking about the Pinstripe Brigade and the heavy sales process around them. But of course, you know, people are people and, you know, generally business people are very open to collaboration and open to new ideas. There has to be flexibility, as you've experienced too. So why is it then that when we come across those type of groups, we come across a group that seems to either buck that trend or are only out for themselves or provide that experience that isn't positive, that isn't empathetic, that isn't the sharing nature that we're so fortunate is more prevalent today? Because you're like that. You're very much a giving person. And I wanted, because the reason why I ask about the community is that, so let's give an example of today. So I'm looking at, the advantage of running a Facebook group is that you obviously get some data within Facebook as it is. And I'm looking at the top contributors for the last 28 days. You joined the community, by the way, in September 2016, just 4 months after the group started. How did you hear about it, by the way? Do you remember?
I think it was, it must have been on Facebook. I actually can't remember. It must have been on Facebook.
We would have only had a couple of hundred members by then, not the 10,500 we've got now.
I'm not sure. Did you run an ad at some point? It could have been something like that, or it could just simply have been someone in the group that told me. Yeah, it was probably someone in the group that told me then that it was a thing and I should try it out.
Well, I'm glad they did. Anyway, so looking at the community, the top 10 contributors, and you're second with 97 comments and 4 posts. Now, they're just numbers that are largely meaningless, I suspect, to most people listening. But what stands out for me is that you don't post anything that is self-promotional. You rarely take part in the thread every Wednesday, which is the midweek selfie, which is when people can promote their own blogs and events, etc. but yet you're an incredibly, and always have been, an incredibly active part of the community. So what does the sense of a professional, a good professional community mean to you, whether it's Freelance Heroes or something else?
Well, sometimes I meet people at networking meetings or on a, you know, on a networking call or a course, and you know, they're maybe 1 or 2 years down their journey, and people will ask, you know, they'll do a round robin and they'll ask, how long have you been doing this? And I'll say approximately 15 years, and everybody goes, oh, you're so experienced, you must know everything. And you know, the truth is, absolutely I don't. That's a hilarious idea that I would know everything. So for me, the community is about learning, you know, seeing how everyone else does it, about watching how people respond to difficulties, about you know, celebrating along with people who have successes, like they've gained their first client. I'm always really tickled in the group whenever I see new people joining and they say, oh, I've just started, I've quit my job last Friday, I'm just started Monday, I'm sitting at my laptop, I'm drawing up a list of customers, I'm ringing my friend to have a wee chat about how she did it. And then, you know, a couple of weeks later, a couple of months later, they say, I've got my first customer and they're so-and-so and I'm really excited to start. You know, that really is just such a piece of good news and encouragement for other new people who are, you know, very new on their freelancing journey as well. So for me, it's an opportunity to learn and to celebrate with other people. And as you said, you know, to give advice where I can. If I think I know the answer to something, I'm quite willing to jump in and either, you know, share my opinion or my experience. And especially where I think people are maybe going to make a dangerous or a silly decision, I like to try and share a little story, maybe, is usually what really helps people. This is what I did, this is what I encountered, and, you know, here's a way to get around this issue.
So, I mean, for me, the bit that you said there is that, you know, if you know the answer, you'll comment, because actually knowing the answer or not is largely irrelevant to most of the questions that appear in the community. It's about, as you said there, your story, your experience, and actually go, well, this happened to me. Doesn't mean it will happen to you. Doesn't mean that you're going to, if you follow the same path, you'll get the same results. You can only share that, you know, kind of empathetic element to you. Have you made, from being this selfless, if you like, person within the community, have you made any really strong connections from there? Has anything been born out of being part of the community? What I'm trying to get across is the sense of actually being part of a community is more than just promoting your products and services. It's setting a spark. And I want to understand if that spark has been lit for you and where it's gone.
Yeah, I suppose I would say that I've made some business friends out of it, certainly. People who have the same ridiculous sense of humour as I do and who are just as sarcastic as I am. You have a few of those in the group, certainly, Ed, including yourself.
I was wondering if you're going to, yes. Thank you.
That's been done. So, yeah, I've definitely made a few good business friends who seem to think on the same wavelength. And, you know, whenever I have an issue, I can ping them on Facebook, you know, privately or in the group and ask a question. But more than that, and I wouldn't say more importantly, because for me, the emotional kind of community support is more important. And you say, you know, that I don't really do sales in the group. And, you know, I know that's not what your group is about. And it's probably the single factor that attracted me. Whenever I joined the group, I saw that that wasn't a thing. You didn't have to wade through sales posts from lots of people. So I appreciate that. But having said that, recently I have gained probably 3 or 4 referrals from 2 different people in the group that have set me up with over a year's worth of business. That's just in the last, you know, 2 months. Now, wow. That's a huge achievement for us, because we're normally not booked fully so far in advance. Normally we could be booked out maybe 6 or 8 months in advance, but to be booked out sort of, you know, 14, 15 months in advance. So, you know, way beyond this time next year, we have now 3 big clients and have also secured all of those clients. And that's due to 4 referrals in the group, one of which is still to be decided. So, you know, that's not a reason to join the group, but it's just something that can come out of you know, investing the time, getting to know people, making friends. And if you get referrals out of that, great. If you don't, fine. That's not what the group is for. But it's just something that can happen whenever people start to get to know you, what it is you do and how you work. I think then that can eventually lead to referrals as well.
I think the key point that you mentioned there as well is that those referrals happened recently. So they clearly weren't a reason for you to be part of it, because you've been a member of it now for 4 years. So the fact that it happened recently is I think a key element of why it was so important for you to kind of be a part of that, which is great. What's the, you know, 15 years down the line of being a freelancer, and with all the things that you've read from posts of people who have started their journey themselves, and obviously you've been experiencing it yourself, when you look back, not so much do you have any regrets, but is there anything you wish you did differently? Or is there anything that if you were to meet yourself on the day you started your freelancing journey, what message would you give that Dawn of 15 years ago?
Probably two things. One is quite an emotional one, and one is maybe more a practical one. And I'll start with the practical one. I think I would do more planning and more research before I started. You know, we started off kind of accidentally, almost a year in advance of when we planned to. So we were still in the middle of planning whenever we started, and we just decided, okay, let's just do this because of the illness at the start. So I think I would do more planning, more research on the market, who's going to buy, what I wanted to sell, which at that time was training courses and spaces on courses and bookings. So I do a bit more planning around that. What are people willing to pay? In order to realize they were willing to pay more than I thought, and also that there wasn't such a big demand for it as I realized. It's really important to know, is there a demand for the service or product that you want to offer? It turned out there wasn't such a big demand for it because training is very heavily subsidized here. So it's difficult to compete against free course that's government funded. So, you know, we moved out of that mostly. Still do it a little bit, but it's mostly online. And the other thing I would say to myself is probably that you are enough. And that's kind of on the emotional or the confidence side. I was extremely intimidated at those early kind of very poncy, formal, suited and booted networking meetings. And it really put me off. And I thought, I can't sell, because I had conflated the two. I put sales and networking together. And I thought, I just can't sell. I can't do this. I can't make a business work. So finding those smaller communities that were really interested in freelancing, running a business, running a small business in particular, and staying kind of at that small lifestyle size business, that was really important for me. So that's what I go back and tell myself is, you're enough. What you have is enough. Your experience is enough. And, you know, you'll learn as you go along.
I think that's a wonderful message to pass on to anyone else who's listening and is in that process now of starting their business, because whether it was 15 years ago or now, I'm pretty sure that won't have changed. So where are you aiming to go? I mean, it's quite interesting. Sorry, just going back to the planning side, because you're clearly someone who likes to plan, unless it's putting your prices up, in which case you'll do it immediately. Where do you decide what is planning and what doesn't?
Well, you know, it's funny that you mentioned the prices. I'm going to go off on a diversion here because I'm just about to do exactly the same thing again. I'm about to put my prices up. Sorry to any potential clients who are listening. And, you know, that's just a result of confidence, because I'm happy and content that we have, you know, what we need now for the next little while. So I've literally nothing to lose. And I have completely now forgotten the question, but I think you're asking about what next, really.
I went off on a tangent. So the second part of the question, or the bit that you started to answer then, which is, you know, how do you decide what needs planning and what doesn't?
Yeah, I think our previous sort of big plan, and this might not sound like a business plan to a lot of people, but for us it very definitely was. I'll tell you about our last one then about what's coming next. So our last business plan was, we wanted to be financially completely independent, meaning that we weren't tied to any one particular client, that we weren't relying on one big client for income, and then if they left or the contract ended, we'd be stuck. And we also wanted to be location free. Those things are kind of connected in our head, but maybe they're not in listeners' heads. But the location independence for us was a huge one. And we achieved that probably about 2 or 3 years ago, where we were no longer fixed to clients being based in Belfast. We moved away from that and we chased international clients very deliberately. We didn't turn down local clients who are based where we are, but we just didn't market or chase after them, really. So we've achieved that. We can work wherever we want. For example, a couple of years ago, we went off to Germany for a month. My husband had a little contract there. He was there 4 or 5 months and I joined him for about a month. So that was a lovely experience to be able to live in a different country, experience, you know, their culture and how they do things, but also to be able to work at the same time. So that was sort of previous goal. Future goals, I don't know if we have anything sort of very lofty in mind, but certainly one of our business goals would be to work less hours in the week. So to achieve that, what we're doing, what we have been doing for a few years is switching away from, working so much in the business ourselves and being more project managers for the client projects that we have on board. And that means taking on more freelancers ourselves. So that would be the current or the future goal, is to, instead of working a full week, to work less hours than that, more in the management end, and then to have freelancers to do the donkey work, as I would like to call it. And that frees us up if we want to do a little bit more travel and we wanted to take a day off in the week while we're away somewhere in Europe and want to, you know, see around us, do a little bit of tourism, then we can do that.
Sounds idyllic. I can't let this conversation conclude without asking about 2020 and how a COVID world has, and ask the question actually, how the COVID world has affected your business.
Honest answer, most obvious answer is because we work from home already, because we're basically 98% hermits anyway, introverts, it hasn't really affected us an awful lot. And in terms of the business coming in, so that's on the personal side, in terms of the business coming in, we've still had the same kind of level of business coming in. It's even increased. I don't think that's due to COVID. That's just a coincidence. But it hasn't affected us so much. Of course, like everyone else, we miss seeing family and friends. And, you know, it is a little bit isolating and we can't get out. And particularly what we miss is going off on a Friday morning for a fry down at the local, coffee shop. But I don't think COVID has affected our business so much, but what I have noticed among business people is that people are more concerned and kind and caring. And that has been something that has come through for me. And I'm talking about business people, potential clients, people who we network with, our client staff even. Every time we go on a call, usually on Slack, I spend a lot of my day on Slack on calls. People who are really, our sort of virtual colleagues will ask, how are you doing? Are you okay? How are things in Northern Ireland? How are things in Ireland? And they'll check in with us, how we're doing, are we okay, first, and then they will go on to deal with the topic of the call. And even if it's a call where there's maybe 10 or more people involved, I find that the person who's hosting the call will even do that, will check in with everybody. You know, how are things in Australia? How are things in America? Is everything okay in Ireland? And then they'll move on to the business of the call. So I think, you know, if any kind of positive has come out of all of this, is it's that it's made business people more human and kinder and softer to each other.
There is the adage that stick to radiators, not drains. And I urge anyone listening to connect with you on LinkedIn or, follow the way that you interact on in the Freelance Heroes community too, because your focus is very much the warm focus rather than the cold, hard sell focus as well, which I think makes the world a better place.
Thank you very much, Ed.
And I look forward to, I've never been to Northern Ireland. I say that with nothing other than guilt. When I do, I look forward to having a fry with you at your local coffee shop.
Exactly. You should feel guilty if you've not visited this part of Northern Ireland. It's absolutely beautiful. We have rolling hills, we have lovely cliffs, and we have sea views, and yeah, all of it. And the food as well is excellent.
There you go. Brilliant. I'll leave that in. Bit of a little TripAdvisor review there for Northern Ireland. Dawn, it's been lovely to chat to you and get to know you a bit better. Thank you for being the positive light that shines so often within Freelance Heroes community too, and whatever the next parts of your journey, and the I wish you nothing but good health and success.
Thank you very much, Ed, and also thank you for providing the community for us all. It was you guys that set it up, obviously, in the first place, so all of us really appreciate that.
Thanks again, Dawn, and I'd love to know what being part of a community means to you and to your freelance business, or if you work with freelancers, where do you see the connection between what you provide and the need for a freelance community too? As ever, email your stories and experiences to podcast@freelance-heroes.com. Thanks very much for listening. We'll be back next week. Until then, bye for now.